The first emitter on our list is Kinlayland Farming Limited, Mr. Chris Cairns. Second submitter is the Mid-Aparima Catchment Group. Come on up and arrange yourselves at the submitter table here. Good morning and welcome to you all. I'll ask you to introduce yourselves to us in a minute, but just to let you know, thanks very much for putting in the original submission, which we've read. We've also read the evidence that you pre-circulated, and thanks for doing that. It's been very helpful to us. Yeah, don't need to read either of those documents out to us, the original submission or the evidence, because we have read them. But you're very welcome to speak to those, highlight your key points for us, and make sure that we're very clear what you'd like us to do. Over to you.
Good morning. We represent the Mid-Aparima Catchment Group. I'm Jolene Gurman. We have Kevin Dixon, Hadley Gurman, Edwin Mabonga and Chris Adams. Firstly, we'd like to thank the panel, the council and the staff for the opportunity to present today. We acknowledge the huge amount of work that has gone into the whole water and land process. Today, we will briefly address the main areas of concern we have with the proposed plan. These have largely been covered in our submission, further submission and hearing statement, which have already been submitted. We'll also touch on the recommendations from the Section 42A report.
Right. The Mid-Aparima Catchment Group was formed in early 2016. We are predominantly farmers, but our membership is open to all community members within our area. Our group fits between the upper and lower Aparima catchment groups and represents stakeholders from Otago, north to Raisebush, Nightcaps Road to the Raisebush Bridge, and encompasses the Baywater area. So our values include building relationships for a successful future. We need to be environmentally, economically, and socially sustainable. Aiming to improve water quality within our catchment, to understand current science and to build on this. Focusing on credible education to promote best practice management and to document what we are actually doing. Working productively with all other organisations involved with water quality. Our key messages for the panel today are: overly prescriptive rules will not work, as farmers need to be able to use education and changing technology to achieve desired outcomes. Agriculture contributes almost 22% of Southland's GDP. We must be certain that any extra costs placed on this sector are worthwhile and achieve their desired outcomes sustainably. Actual environmental improvements proven by science must be achieved. And catchment groups, along with good management practices and farm environmental plans, are effective and must be utilised.
At the last census, approximately 700 people lived in Otago. Its population and livelihood are strongly influenced by the prosperity of agriculture and forestry. Prior to the dairy expansion, the major type of agriculture was sheep farming. There are now approximately 65 dairy farms within our catchment, as well as sheep farms and some support farms. Winter grazing does incur in our catchment, but no significant numbers of animals from outside our catchment are wintered within our catchment.
I don't know, we've got a slide 3, if can be put up there. Yes. So we are concerned about the current plan on the reserve. We are concerned that the current plan does not include a process where farmers and landowners can challenge the physiological zones that the land is allocated. We recognize the significant amount of scientific work that's gone into it. But like those slides there, they indicate on the maps they are in the bedrock zone, but those are dug 3 meters deep and it's not, that's not the right zone for that. we found bedrock on that property, but it's not where those researchers one says it is on the maps. However, although we are not disputing the physiological zones are accurate at regional scale, it is unlikely that they are inaccurate to a farm scale. Farmers know their land better than anyone and need to have a process to use this knowledge, as well as scientific evidence to challenge any assignment that they believe is incorrect. We feel that this point is inadequately covered in Section 42A report. It is briefly mentioned as part of the summary submission on page 72, section 4.92, and page 246, section 7.433, but we are unable to find a recommendation.
Rule 13, discharge from installed subsurface drainage systems. Although we support in principle Rule 13 and accept the council must be bound by the NPS, FM and the RMA requiring water quality to be maintained or improved, we feel it's near impossible to follow this rule without an exception to Part A, number one, to allow for tile cleaning. We are confident that if Southland's tile drains are not periodically cleaned, that the perverse environmental outcomes, such as overland flow, sediment and phosphate runoff, and bank sloughing, will outweigh any issues from tile cleaning.
Okay, Rule 23, intensive winter grazing. We support the definition of the intensive winter grazing as defined by the Section 42A report. Grazing of stock between May and September inclusive on forage crops, excluding pasture and cereal crops. We oppose the Section 42A report's recommendation of up to 50 hectares of intensive winter grazing per land holding without resource consent. We oppose the use of areas without any scientific basis. Larger farms will be disadvantaged in respect to smaller land holdings. This rule implies that large operators are less environmentally sustainable than smaller operators. This rule does not target poor behaviours. Instead, with a limit of area, we may see more poor behaviours, such as the use of sacrifice paddocks where stock are kept all winter and feed is carted into them. The use of higher yield crops, such as fodder beet, as opposed to kale. An increase in cropped area for 2017 to increase the 3-year average. An increase in supplement fed on cropping areas. And negative impacts on animal welfare, such as growing out young stock, calving, and lambing mortality. We recommend that Rule 23 is revised and any reference to any area is removed. We support management plans in accordance with Appendix N to be supplied to ES in lieu of consents.
Could we have slide 4 up on the screen, please? Now, we've got that drone map down on the property and it's accurate down to 20 centimetres, which is more accurate than what ES is using at the moment. And as you can see, the areas that are in red, which are above the 20 degree slope, are isolated pockets, which if we had to follow the rules, they'll be left out and will be hard to work. So we challenge that and hope that they can be worked in conjunction with the areas around them. Otherwise, they revert to ghosts and are unworkable and unmanageable.
Rule 38, animal and vegetative waste. We support the Section 42A recommendation of deleting the restriction of applying animal and vegetative waste between 1st of May to 30th of September. This is a good example of good management practice in place instead of prescriptive rules. Winter lane maintenance is crucial for animal welfare and staff health and safety.
General comments, definitions. FMUs, we believe that these are too big currently. We accept the Section 42A report recommendation of providing where circumstances show that the fresh water objectives and water quality and quantity limits would be better served by establishing smaller FMUs at a subcatchment level. This will be undertaken. Land holding. We were against contiguous landholders being disadvantaged with respect to winter grazing area, number of unconsented standoff pads, etc. We accept the section 42A report recommendation that the definition of a land holding is amended to include the requirement that a land holding is also a single operating unit. Rules that make farmers non-compliant before the hearing process is finished. We disagree with the principle making rules that mean that all farmers are non-compliant straight away. Waterway definition. We recommend that Fonterra's definition of a waterway, 1 metre wide, 30 centimetres deep, around 6 months of the year, is used with the addition of a gravel bed. We'd like to see more detail around Environment Southland Register of independently audited self-management participants in the plan.
Conclusion. We are pleased with some of the recommendations of the Section 42A report, but feel that there are still significant changes that need to make the plan to reach the outcomes that are practical and fair, as well as achieving improved environmental outcomes. The Mid-Eparuma Catchment Group is committed to being good stewards of the environment while maintaining economic sustainability. We will continue to build relationships within our group and within the wider community. We want to work with Environment Southland and thank the hearing panel for their time today.
Thanks very much for that. We've received a number of submissions and presentations from various catchment groups within the region, and I think we've been consistently impressed with the work you've done and the positive attitude that you've brought to the process, so thank you very much for that. You've continued that positive theme. We do welcome that. I'll see if we have questions for you from the panel. Lloyd?
I think, Mr. Chairman, just a couple. You mentioned in Rule 23, no area, but a number of submitters have said to us that they would actually like a percentage, and that varies a little bit on what they think that percentage should be against a set area. And they've also indicated to us that they'd like an indication of the consenting process if they broke that by activity, so it was clear, precise, they knew the process costing, the length of that consent. Would you have any comment to make about that? Do you agree that a percentage would be better, or are you still pretty happy to have an open area and use the good management practices?
I guess a percentage would be fairer than a specific land area, but I guess the animals in Southland all have to be wintered somewhere, so regardless of what we do, they all have to be somewhere. So I think the good management practice is still, particularly in our catchment, which is quite safe from a winter grazing point of view, good management practice and winter grazing plans and farm environmental plans is probably what we'd aim for. If there was rules, percentages would be fairer, like the working draft had originally, and then everyone kicked out.
Okay, just one other comment. In your submission, you made reference to spray and pray, but you were concerned about the areas. You want to be able to gorse and broom spraying within that area. You make any comment about that?
Yeah, so we just want to make sure that we're still able to control gorse and broom on the steeper areas. Is that what you mean?
Yes. So yeah. if we in some way allowed for that, you'd be happy with that?
Yes. Activity. Yeah, because obviously the nitrogen leaching from gorse is quite horrific. So if we weren't able to control that on the steeper areas, then there's negative environmental consequences from spraying that area, but when we felt spraying that area.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Sean.
Yeah, just one thing. You comment on policy 46, which is the FMUs, saying that, in your view, they're too big. So you're from the Aparima FMU. Just how, what would that look like if they were smaller, and how would we determine what is an effective subgroup or new FMU? Or what, give us some of your thinking around that.
Okay, so from my point of view, the FMU is in the plan, but it's going to be used going forward for limit settings. And I just think, like, if you look at the Aparima FMU, from the top, the upper group, right down to the lower group, there's a huge change. Like, it's just far too big to be workable, to build. We really need good relationships within the area to work towards limit setting. And I think that the area is just far too big for our catchments to work effectively.
So how would one determine what is an effective unit or cell to operate?
I think like where each catchment drains to, or where the what area affects what water, like where our area drains to, or the like the upper group, they drain to different areas and we do, or they might affect the water in different ways. So I think it's important that we make sure that the areas are split up so that we know that what we're doing in our area is actually affecting, we can measure what it's doing to our water. Whereas I think that the whole Aparima, it's going to be hard to quantify water quality outcomes along that whole FMU.
In our particular case, it's each side of the river from Te Areo up. We see, my view is that one side of the river is a different catchment to the other because they're totally different drainage. The opposite side of the river is doesn't take far away from the river and it heads into the region. So there's a carryover effect there where the west side of the Aparima, north of the Taurau, is a catchment. To me, that's a catchment. But the other side of the river, where Edward is a different zone, different catchment, different water. Yes.
So the mid-Aparima group goes from the Taurau to where?
Northcaps.
Roughly
northcaps. And to Wairio, up into the end. Yes.
Thank you.
There are no questions, thanks.
Thank you. Regarding the physiographic zones, you showed some pictures of what was supposed to be bedrock, but it didn't look like bedrock. If you had to do a farm management plan, for example, and you had to identify the physiographic zones on the property, is that a feasible thing to do for you to do, or do you think that's too difficult as well?
I think from a farmer, it is a feasible thing to do, but it's challenging bringing it and saying, no, actually those fissure zones, these are my actual zones on the farm. As farmers, we can do that. If, when you put in drainage, you can see what rock you're putting, what rock it is.
Okay. Good, thank you. The picture you showed of the slopes is very interesting, quite amazing technology. The the red zone there are over 20 degrees, I understand, is that right?
Yes.
Does it much over 20, or is it 25, 30, or?
No, they're not much over, they're 20, 25, I think.
Yes. So if the rule said an average, if you're allowed to cultivate an average, or the slope was an average 20, so that some was a little bit over, would that be practical?
That would be practical, yes.
Okay. And regarding Rule 38 and the application of effluent over the winter, now the Section 42A says that restriction no longer applies, but you've still got to apply it when the soil moisture is satisfactory. How would farmers be able to determine that?
I guess it'd be like applying effluent. So most people would use Environment Safe on the website, or there has been a trend towards the heavy individual farm and testing as well. I think you've got to realise that effluent is actually quite a good source of nutrients, so farmers do actually want to apply it when it's the best practice so they can get the value of the nutrients that they've already paid for, so that putting it on when it's not going to grow or be taken up, it won't happen as much as you think it might.
All right, good, thanks very much.
I think I might
say, can I comment on that?
Oh yeah, sure.
We've got these major effluent ponds now. We have to use every opportunity we can to put them on the ground, and if it's in the winter time when it can be dry and frosty and conditions are perfect for it, if you're not allowed to, you're cutting out a percentage of the year where it is possible.
Yeah. Do you want to say something?
I was just going to add that if you find in the Aparima catchment group, from the lower to the upper, there's about 5 farmers that have got soil problems. So monitoring the soil. So we are being active about knowing what's happening in the soil.
Yeah. Very good. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
I've just got one question about Rule 13 in your paragraph 14 and your pre-circulated evidence, you asked that Rule 13 is amended to allow for periodic tile cleaning. What's periodic in your mind?
I guess it's as needed, but you'd hope it wouldn't be.
Typically.
What do you guys think? How often do you clean your drains?
Periodic.
Is it like once a year or once
every
5 years? No,
once
every 5 years.
It's required, yes.
So it's sort of 5 to 10 years on average.
Okay. Yep.
Very difficult.
All right, it's no further questions from us. So thanks very much for coming in and doing all the hard work that you have done to bring the material before us.
Thank you.
Thanks.